Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Nashville.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's game with words, where the thoughts are lofty and the language elevated.
There once was a drop in a bucket.
It landed on Old Nantucket. Yeah, we could keep going here.
No, you don't want to keep going.
Shame on you. Shame. You're going to become quite familiar with the editing process over the next few minutes, ladies and gentlemen.
No way, that's a great joke.
I don't think that's making hair. I just don't.
Picky.
You can get that anywhere. That's what we all
do. Yeah, right.
Okay, perhaps sometimes we cross the line, but hardly ever, and certainly... certainly not this week. Sabrina, how about a quickie?
Why, Richard, I had no idea.
You silver-tongued fox, you.
Respectable wordplay follows on Says You.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. GOP presidential hopeful Rick Santorum says nothing is going to deter his bid for the GOP presidential nomination. Speaking on CNN, the Pennsylvania Democrat said that if Mitt Romney really were a strong candidate, he'd have a bigger edge in the delegate count than he does now.
Governor Romney spent about $70 million, had huge amounts of resources, huge staff. You know, during the time that these delegates had to be filed for these states, you know, I was driving around in a truck with a guy named Chuck in Iowa, you know, breathing through a swizzle stick and running a marathon.
Santorum has failed to qualify for the ballot in every state on the election calendar, and in some states, he's not fielding a full slate of delegates. Republicans in Puerto Rico vote today with 20 delegates at stake. If a candidate can take better than 50% of the vote, he'll win all of those delegates. After a few months of relative peace on the budget front, NPR's Jim Hawk reports the Democrats and Republicans are readying for a new election year fight over trillion-dollar-plus deficits and what to do about them.
In just one example of upcoming showdowns, House Budget Committee Chairman Representative Paul Ryan is coming out Tuesday with a sequel to last year's Path to Prosperity manifesto that ignited a firestorm over Medicare. Last year's GOP measure would have replaced Medicare's fee-for-service payments to doctors with a voucher-like program in which the government would subsidize the purchase of private health insurance. Congressman Ryan has since modified that proposal to offer both options. President Obama's spending blueprint, released last month, calls for tax increases on wealthier earners and modest spending curbs, but doesn't address the spiraling costs of Medicare and Medicaid. Another major issue, the $50 billion in defense spending cuts mandated by the failure of last year's supercommittee to come up with a new package of deficit cuts. Jim Hawk, NPR News, Washington.
Libya has formally requested the handover of Muammar Gaddafi's former intelligence chief, Abdullah al-Sanusi, who's been arrested in Mauritania. The BBC's Wera Davis tells us that the International Criminal Court issued a warrant for al-Sanusi last year.
According to reports from Mauritania, Sanusi was detained after arriving on a plane from Morocco with forged travel documents. The transitional government in Libya has confirmed the news, but thus far there are no pictures or other proof of the arrest.
We understand that the Libyan government has requested the extradition from Mauritania of al-Sanusi. But it's only if and when the former intelligence chief is behind bars here on Libyan soil that people here will breathe a sigh of relief.
The BBC's Wera Davis in Tripoli. In Yemen, an American has been shot to death by two gunmen on a motorcycle. He was working as a language teacher. This is NPR News. Pope Benedict has launched an investigation into leaks of confidential Vatican documents alleging corruption and financial mismanagement inside the headquarters of the Roman Catholic Church. We get more from David Willey.
The Vatican's daily newspaper, quoting a top Vatican official, said a criminal investigation is underway to try to determine the source of what's being called the VatiLeaks scandal. The official spoke of grave acts of disloyalty and cowardice by so far unidentified Vatican employees. A string of highly sensitive internal documents have been published in Italian media in recent weeks. among them a letter to the Pope from the current Vatican ambassador in Washington, in which he complains of cronyism, nepotism, and corruption among the administrators of Vatican City. And in another leaked document, the Vatican Bank stands accused of failing to meet international banking standards to combat money laundering. In Rome, I'm David Willey for NPR News.
In Cairo today, bells rang out and mourners chanted and wept at St. Mark's Orthodox Coptic Cathedral, where services were held for the late patriarch Pope Shenouda III. He led Egypt's Christian minority for 40 years. Today, Egypt's estimated 10 million Christians worry about the political rise of Islamic movements in the wake of former President Hosni Mubarak's demise. 1952's Mr. Universe has turned 100. Manohar H. of Calcutta says his secret to those many years has been happiness and life without tension. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for 40 years working to improve health and health care, on the web at rwjf.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Riverside, California, comes from the good folks at KVCR-FM. And the Lowe's Santa Monica Beach Hotel. Elegance on the ocean. Steps to Santa Monica Pier. On the web at loweshotels.com/Santa Monica.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of the University Theater at the University of California at Riverside, in Riverside, California, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. Representing the West Coast, he's a certified diamond in the rough, who'd rather have a little more green, Doug Palau. Jeez. She's on par with the best in the business. A little birdie told me so. Sabrina Wind. And he's certainly got the drive. He has irons in the fire. It's his putter that gets him in trouble. Mr. Nat Segalov. All right, who's going to captain?
I believe the heavy responsibility will fall to me.
Doug will be the captain. To my left, team two, representing the East. Why, back in grade school, they used to call him Harry Potter because he bothered all the girls taking ceramics. Arnie Reisman. Why? Why, back in high school, they used to call her Sybil, and she saw Bill almost every weekend. Carolyn Faye Fox. And in college, they called her Gigi, especially that night they discovered champagne. Miss Paula Lyons. And who's going to lead?
Carolina.
No, I will lead.
Carolyn will be the captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points, define, and for an additional 5, try to divine the origins of the following common words and phrases. Carolyn, take a powder.
Take a powder. Get out of here.
Would you care to elaborate any?
It's really rapid.
Get out of here in a puff of smoke, pretty
yes.
much.
Yes, that's exactly yes. right. To get it, not only to get out, but to get out in a hurry.
Yes.
That's 5 points. Where do you think this might come from?
You know, I wondered. I was in some store in North Carolina and saw a rack of headache powders, and I thought, does this have anything to do with the phrase, to take a powder?
No, it does. Well, there are so many derivations for this, so many possible derivations.
Oh,
I'm
well,
not
that's one
say,
of them.
I'm
yes.
not going to say no.
Of course.
Is it gunpowder?
It is exactly
like,
gunpowder.
Yes,
yeah.
Excellent.
And then you go, poof, and you're gone.
It's all to the powder boys on board the boats.
It's a 16th century reference to gunpowder. Yeah. At least most people say that, you know, because it propels bullets and shells. And came from military, from 16th century military. You care to try one or two of the other?
Talcum powder?
Yeah.
Not talcum powder, no.
Leaving, well, you leave so fast that you're leaving no trail at all except maybe the powder version of you.
Yeah, the dust off your
dust.
Feet. You know, that's
yes.
one.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
there's one other one. Take a shot at it.
Some type of poison? Like get out of here bad enough to drop dead?
Not poison. Anybody in the audience?
Snuff?
Not snuff. Laxatives.
Laxatives. Oh. Wow. So we're going all the way back to Preparation A?
Yeah. Now, don't applaud that now. You set the standard too low when you
right.
do that. Try this one, Doug. Drop in the bucket.
Well, a drop in the bucket means that it's an insignificant amount, drop being only a small part of a bucket.
Yep.
Its origin is from firefighting?
It is not, actually.
Or a bucket that was put under a water pump?
No, this is a very specific derivation.
I was going to say if the bucket had been used as a weight for something, a single drop wouldn't make any difference. But
this goes back a long way, and it's actually a literary reference.
Oh, if there once was a drop in a bucket.
Like a guillotine? It landed on old Nantucket.
Is
yeah, we
still
keep going.
No, you don't want to keep going.
Well, we were saying guillotine over here.
Guillotine?
Perhaps
a
simple
guess.
Catching device.
No, it's not that.
What would you be dropping in a bucket?
Because it goes
a water. Smaller bucket.
Apples?
So,
are we at Eve? Is it milk?
In a way, we're at Eve.
Seriously?
In a
Eve?
Way.
Eve.
It's
Eve.
From the Bible, you mean?
It is in the Bible. You know, what? Give them 8 points. They eventually got to the Bible. That's where it comes from. Isaiah 40:15, behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket and are counted as the small dust of the balance. So that's a
drop of a bucket.
Yeah, that's the exact quote. But, you know, since there are so many translations of the Bible, I'm sure I'll hear from many, many people.
Yes. But we know that you use the King Fred version anyways.
I did use the King Fred version. Try this one, Arnie. Definition and derivation of left-handed compliment.
Well, it's a slur, actually, against southpaws.
It is kind of a slur.
It's like saying, your skin isn't as broken out as it used to be.
Used to be, yeah. That's a good example of one.
That's a good example.
It's a backhanded, left-handed. It's a underhanded compliment. Yeah, you're not doing the person very well in terms of what you just said to make them
feel
good.
That's 5 points.
So to say, I'm assuming it has something to do with the fact that for many centuries, left-handed people were considered to be inferior to right-handed people.
Well, you would think so. It's not quite right. I'm going to give you a little help on this because I enjoyed finding out about this. This is about a particular ceremony.
Specific ceremony.
Yep.
Was it religious in nature?
Like getting married. Like your left hand.
Like getting married is exactly
like
right.
Like where the ring goes.
Well,
so
I'm going to give you guys 8 points because you're a long way there. You got to marriages, which is the important thing. Does anybody on the other side want to take a shot?
Marriage
how do you spell
side?
Compliment?
Who's on the left side?
Oh.
The bride?
With an
I
and E.
Family.
Well, that's, Arnie, that's very
the bride's
critical.
Family is on the left side.
I was about
side.
To say, you're on the wrong side for some reason.
Yes.
You're on the wrong side.
That's exactly
it's,
right.
It's some, for some reason an insult to be on the left side.
Not only is it an insult, this comes from morganatic marriages,
morganatic.
Which were those marriages quite common in European royalty where the bride received nothing in terms of the groom's estate and his heirs were not recognized. In other words, this was a way to have sort of a marriage on the side.
Really?
And that's what a morganatic marriage was. And the bride stood on the wrong side. On the left side, and that's where a left-handed compliment comes from.
Wow. Right.
How did they talk women into doing that?
So we got 8 points?
Well,
they
didn't have money.
Okay. give them 8 points for that. Right. That was pretty good. All right, we're doing definitions and derivations. Sabrina, how about a quickie?
Why, Richard, I had no idea.
You silver-tongued fox here.
Okay, just something that happens very quickly.
Yes.
In a very short period of time versus when it would take normally a longer period of time.
Okay, we'll let it go at that. That's fine. Any relationship
How red am I now?
Any relationship or activity of brief duration, that's 5 points. Where might this come from? And I will give you the hint. It's from the early 20th century. In the 1920s, really.
And it's definitely a relationship, so it's not a dance number or something that would have been quicker.
No, actually, you're...
Oh, how about a shorter dance? Would it be like Dance Card, where people had one dance, but it would be a shorter dance for
maybe
some reason?
A diamond dance or something? Or
It's not a dance, but you're right to go to that that kind of thing.
I mean,
not
speed
a dance.
Dating in the 1920s?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and I will say we're just down the road from the right town to be talking about this.
Okay, so it's a Hollywood term.
It sure is.
Maybe.
Are we talking about a take? I mean, a shot? Something like that?
A very short screen test?
No, a short movie.
That is exactly
a short before
a quickie would be
movie.
under 1 minute because projectors couldn't handle more than about 90 feet of film before the film broke.
Well, actually, it's a little longer than that. These are from 1920s Hollywood B movies that were cheap and quick to produce.
And
they were called quickies, and that's where the expression comes from.
Yeah, I like that I work in Hollywood, but that's not where I went with that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Try this one, Paula. Too many irons in the fire.
Well, too many irons in the fire means you have, of course, too much going on, and you're never likely to get it all done, or at least get it done well.
That's 5 points.
So, too many irons in the fire, I always assumed came from blacksmithing.
Most people assume that.
They
assume incorrectly.
So it's not from blacksmithing.
Would it have
too
to
many
do with
irons in the fire? Is it about cooking then? And is it about, you know, in the old days?
Not cooking, but you're certainly in the right milieu.
Okay, so I'm not heating up a branding iron, and I'm not cooking. Or am I heating up a branding iron?
No, you're not heating up a branding iron.
Not cooking, not branding iron.
Too many irons in the fire. Are we actually talking the primitive version of ironing, like in clothes?
Yes, we are.
So you're actually heating up too many of them in order to actually get anything done because there's too many things to do, is what it says.
You know what?
Your attention's being...
10 points. Very good. That's not exactly right, but... But it's close enough.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually from the Bible.
It's having too many projects at once to give all proper attention. Some say blacksmiths, but most agree that the origin is in the laundry, where the flat iron had to be heated in coals to be effective. And if you put too many irons in the fire, the ones on the outside didn't get hot enough to really do a good job pressing.
There you go.
So I think they deserve the 10 points, don't you?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
10 points.
And I say thank you, Thomas Edison, because I would not have wanted to iron clothes that way.
Right. And Nat, definition and derivation of to pull a boner.
Talks amongst yourselves.
We're a little late, folks, so good night. Good night, everyone. It means to make an egregious mistake.
It does.
Quite often on the air, as Kermit Schaefer would tell us, a boner is also a slender knife, which is used for boning chicken.
But that's not where we're going.
That's not where we're going, but I had to say it.
That's true.
It sounds like it comes out of broadcast. That's the only place I've ever really heard it.
It doesn't come out of broadcast. It comes out of something that came much before that. Still in that realm, but much before that.
Does it have to do with butchering or in some ways removing the
much
structural...
Much before that, meaning like the stage?
Yes.
The stage.
You've got the 5 points for to pull a stupid mistake, and it also you've got extra points because it does come from the stage. The reason I gave this to Nat is because of his encyclopedic knowledge of these things. This goes all the way back to minstrel shows, American minstrel shows.
Oh, Mr. Bones
was
the interlocutor of a minstrel show, the one who gave the straight lines, such as, when's the next bus to Altoona, Arnie?
Yeah.
I don't know. When's the next bus to Altoona?
When's the next bus to Altoona?
I don't know. When's the next bus? We're just doing straight lines.
Oh, sorry. When is the next bus? Okay. Does that mean for the interlocutor to go up or to in some way forget the line you're supposed to feed the person who is on the end man?
You know something? That's 10 points. Woo! Very good, Matt. I knew you'd get this. Very good.
Nice.
That was excellent.
Good job.
Thanks for
it is from American Minstrel Shows. The end man in the line was Mr. Bones, the one who played the bones and all that. And he was asked silly questions by the middleman, Mr. Interlocutor, and eliciting silly answers from Mr. Bones was known as pulling a boner. So that's where that comes from.
Silly.
Excellent job, Nat. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends Perla Bataya and her ensemble. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have blank cards. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot good enough to fool Doug's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Doug if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word blicky. B-L-I-C-K-E-Y, blicky. Folks?
I could while away the hours conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching. If I only had a brain, I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain. With the thoughts I'd be thinking, I could be another Lincoln if I only had a brain. Oh, I could think of things I never thought before, and then I'd sit and think some more. I would not be just a nothing, my head all full of stuffing, my heart all full of pain. And perhaps I deserve you and be even worthy of you if I only had a brain.
Support for Says You in Riverside, California comes from the good folks at KVCR-FM and the Lowe's Santa Monica Beach Hotel. Elegance on the ocean, steps to Santa Monica Pier. On the web at loweshotels.com/Santa Monica.
Oh, I could tell you why the ocean's near.
Says You returns after this from home.
Kevin Kling is a playwright and storyteller you may know for his funny NPR commentaries. He was born with a disabled left arm much shorter than his right, and then a motorcycle accident nearly killed him and took away the use of that right arm. Kevin Kling was always a humorist, and life has made him wise. He opens up on the losses and the laughter we grow into. That's the next on Being from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
This is Neil Conan. In the week ahead on Talk of the Nation, we'll watch the latest developments from the Middle East and Afghanistan and keep an eye on politics closer to home. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us, as usual, on Wednesday. Plus, former Major League catcher Ben Petrick, who developed Parkinson's at age 22 on life after the diagnosis. All that and much more in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
Support for Says You on WPLN comes from JP2 in Hendersonville, hosting a diverse array of summer camps, including fishing, tennis, and lacrosse. Details at jp2hs.org/camp. Pope John Paul II, faith leads us beyond ourselves. And by the generous support of Nashville Public Radio members, you can join our community of supporters by making a tax-deductible contribution at WPLN.org. The time is 9:24, 63 degrees in Nashville.
now full of pain. And perhaps I deserve you and be even worthy of you if I only had a brain.
Hi, this is Richard. I just want to take a moment and thank all the folks who joined the fun with us this year and sold out shows from coast to coast. Details for next season's tapings will be up soon on the website at sayu.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Where if you just follow that join the fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So whether you're in Nashville or New England, north or south, we hope you'll be able to come be in our audience next season for a live performance of Says You.
I think of things I never thought before, and then I'd say, and think some more. I would not be just enough in my head, all full of stuff, in my heart, all full of pain. And perhaps I deserve you and be even worthy of you if I only had a brain. If I only had a brain. If I only had a brain.
That is the fabulous Carola Bataya. Help me thank Karen Hammack on piano, Michael Velasquez on the stand-up bass, and Claude Mann on percussion. Thanks, guys. This gives me a moment also to thank the scorekeepers. That's Lynn Novak on the right and Mr. Benjamin Scherer on the left. Thanks, guys. We have had a few moments with the word blicky. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Blicky. Blicky comes to us from the wonderful world of beekeeping because the blicky is another name for the queen's quarters in the hive. Things could get really sticky if you put your hand in the blicky.
What are you looking at me for? The queen bee's quarters in the hive, that's the blicky.
The blicky.
Could very well be. Or it might be something else, Arnold.
It could be. I think it's some kind of slang. It basically refers to a lunch bucket, a covered metal lunch bucket or pail, lunchbox, those tinny little things with the covers on them, like the little drawings and stuff. What brings to mind that if anybody ever saw Waiting for Guffman, at the end of the film, when Corky's got his nostalgia store, he's selling a Remains of the Day lunchbox.
A covered lunch pail, little covered lunch pail, that's a blicky.
That's a little blicky.
Sounds plausible, but it might be something else. Paula, what do you say?
Well, I guess a blicky is that ash chute that you find under an awful lot of fireplaces. You know, in a lot of houses, there's an opening. You throw the ashes.
Down the blicky.
Down the blicky. So, I mean, to take a page out of Carolyn's book, I guess I'd have to say it can get pretty icky if you stick your hands in the blicky. But it's an ash chute.
It could. The ash chute below the fireplace sends the ashes down to the basement, out of your hair. That could be the blicky. So it is one of three things. It is either the chute that the ashes go down in the fireplace, the covered lunch pail, or the queen bee's quarters in the hive. It is one of those three, and the choice, Doug, is yours.
Well, I actually have a fireplace with an ash chute.
Yes.
Nobody ever told me what it was called. I just figured it was a hole for the ashes.
Yes, that makes sense.
I kept that
Richard
right on the line, I thought. Lunch bucket, I don't know, a blicky in a queen's quarter in a beehive. I think Carolyn thought of the joke before she thought of the definition. So
it's none of them.
None of the above.
None of the above.
Like a fourth choice. No, I actually think it's the ash chute, but I will
The one that doesn't
fly for me at all is the Queen's quarters in the Beehive.
Yeah, no,
I don't know why, which is, of course, probably why it is that. But I guess I just can't imagine a bee calling anything a blicky. it sounds like a hickey on the tongue. Lunch bucket has a certain...
Sounds like a British term.
Britishness about blicky. It, I yeah. guess. Yeah.
I have to say, I'm pro-lunch bucket, but I don't have a good or funny reason why.
Well, you know, they have weird names for things. They have, you know, spotted dick and toad in the hole and all those funny British names
yeah,
for
yeah,
foods.
It does
they
sound
must
British,
have.
Yeah. But he didn't say British.
No, he didn't say British, but he was thinking it.
Okay, I'll tell you honestly why. It's because he was stuck calling it a lunch bucket, and yet we would refer to it as a lunch box. So that's why I was thinking that Arnie might...
I think the ash shoot I,
go
is
for
my
it.
Choice.
Right.
But
you're the captain.
You're the...
Well, if you outvote me,
no,
I'll
no,
we're
change.
Not going to outvote you.
The ash
We're just
going to
make fun of you later when it turns out that you're wrong.
Ash shoot.
The captain has stepped forward. He has said that the blicky... Paula, is the chute that the ashes go down in the bottom of the fireplace. Is that, in fact, what the blicky is?
No, it is not.
10 points for a successful bluff. All right. Okay, audience, it's your turn. You got a 50-50 shot. What do you say? How many say the lunch pail? How many say the queen bee's quarters? Well,
I like queen bees.
I don't even think that's close. They are convinced, Arnie, that the blicky is the lunch pail. Is that in fact what it is?
A metal queen bee's blicky, a covered metal lunch pail.
Is exactly what it is. 10 points for Paula's team.
I made an ash of myself.
Let's go on to round three. By their works ye shall know them. The following persons might be unfamiliar by name, but they've all created something completely memorable. 10 points if you can identify their fruitful labors. And as a hint, if you don't get it, I'm going to give you the date in which it occurred. All right? Carolyn, Ernest Lawrence Thayer.
Casey at the Bat.
Oh, for...
Thank you, Arnie.
How did you know that? I didn't get to 1888. I didn't get the newspaper. I didn't get anywhere. It's Casey at the Bat is, of course, Ernest Lawrence Thayer. All right, make it a little harder. Try this one, Doug. Patty and Mildred J. Hill.
Mildred J. Hill.
Patty and Mildred J.
Is it
J.
something
Hill.
In common usage?
Oh, it certainly is.
Oh, and...
By men, I feel like I'm playing, what's my line or something.
Were they, yeah, now, yeah.
Were they doctors?
The, Richard?
No,
you
didn't give a year yet.
What was the year? Oh, he didn't give
the year.
He didn't give
the year.
The year, let me give you the hints. The year was 1893. Yeah.
Well, that
and they
up.
Were both kindergarten teachers.
Oh.
They invented the blackboard?
Oh, what a great guess. No, they did not invent anything. They... Created
oh,
something, actually.
Yeah. Well, they created it.
Oh, yeah.
You
happy
got
birthday?
It?
Yeah.
Patty and Mildred J. Hill,
yeah,
you
the
got
song,
it.
Happy birthday?
The song,
yes.
Happy Birthday, yep. Is exactly yeah, right. 10 points. Do you know what it originally, what the song originally was?
Something
good
about
morning.
Bullying.
Good morning to you.
Yes, that's yeah. right. Yeah. It was a greeting to the teacher, good morning to you, wow. good morning, and it became Happy Birthday. Right. All right, try this one, Arnie. I'll give you the hardest one.
Oh, good.
Ustad Ahmad Lahori, Lahuri. Ustad Ahmad Lahori.
Oh. You're going to give me some other thing?
Yeah, I'll give you the hint. I'm just going to see if you know it straight out.
Lahori.
Lahori, did he invent the EpiPen?
He did not. But he did this in 1653.
Whoa.
1653.
Whoa, created a table of contents.
Somebody had to.
Created a table of contents.
Took out his own appendix. I don't know.
Took out his own appendix.
He was an indexer, and he created table.
That's right.
1653.
1653.
Is it a map?
It is not a map, but this did occur halfway around the world.
Really, guess that part. Yes. Did he have a profession?
He did.
He built something.
He built.
Well, not with his bare hands, but yes.
No, he designed something. Okay.
Yes. And he did it in 1653.
What was built in
1653?
Does it lean?
The Taj Mahal?
The Taj Mahal is exactly right. You got the... You got the hints, so we'll give you 7 points for that. 7 points is fair. All right, listen to these names and do the best you can here on this one, Sabrina. Dr. B.H. McKeeby and Nan Wood.
Oh, that sounds very familiar.
Did they write something?
They did not write anything, no. Dr. B.H. McKeeby and Nan Wood.
Did they invent something?
They did not. They did this in 1930.
I was still trying to figure out what they might have done.
Did they codify something?
They did not codify anything. They posed for something.
Like American Gothic?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
American Gothic?
That's exactly right. Right. American Gothic.
Is Nan Wood related to Grant Wood?
Nan Wood,
Grant Wood's sister.
Grant Wood's sister. Yes. And Dr. McKeeby, of course, was their family dentist.
So I got a billion points for that, right?
You got 7 points for that because you got the hints, but you got 7 points. Try this one, Paula. Goodson and Lincoln Borglum.
Of course.
Wait a minute.
Goodson and Lincoln Borglum.
You want me to... Borglum?
Borglum. B-O-R-G-L-U-M.
Oh.
Borglum.
Just let me know.
Don't you just want to take a Goodson wet and newspaper Borglum. And hit him in the head, don't you?
Goodson and Borglum. And what year, please?
It actually covers the period
many
from
years.
1927 to 1941. Mm-hmm. Oh, the other side knows.
And there's more than one thing involved.
Yes, it's true. Yeah.
Paul? Okay.
Go ahead, Arnie.
Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore is exactly right. Yeah. 10 points. Nice job.
That's
And also Geronimo.
Yeah.
And Geronimo. Yeah.
And finally... so sorry. And finally, Nat, try this one. Frederick Bartholdi.
What?
Oh, Frederick? He designed the Statue of Liberty.
He absolutely did. The Statue of Liberty, you didn't even need a clue. Very good. Nice job. Let's go on to round four, which is Doug's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word reast.
Reast.
R-E-A-S-T. Reast. Paola?
Please feel free to sing along with us. Promise the lyrics aren't too difficult.
Beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the the panic till I'm gathered safely in. Lift me like an olive branch and be my homeward dove, and dance me to the end of love.
Briefly, Says You pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back.
Support for Says You and WPLN comes from WPLN listener members, men from St. Thomas Hospital, transforming treatment for brain tumors through the Unity system, allowing doctors to work in real time as a unified team to remove a tumor, preserving vital brain function and eloquence, St. Thomas Hospital. And by Animal Emergency at Nashville Veterinary Specialists, offering pet emergency services, nights and weekends, 365 days a year, located at 2971 Sidco Drive, behind 100 Oaks Mall. Details at NashvilleVetSpecialists.com. Nashville weather for today: isolated showers and thunderstorms today. Otherwise, mostly sunny and the high in the lower 80s. Partly cloudy tonight, the low in the upper 50s. And for Monday tomorrow, sunny skies from the high in the mid-80s. Right now, it's 64 degrees in Nashville. The time is 9:41.
Music I heard last week. So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. Bataya, thank you very much, Bella. You have given us a few moments with the word reist. We will go first to Doug Palau.
Well, it's kind of an interesting word. If you took some food, say, or a roast beef, and you set it out in the desert sun for a week, it would become reist instead of a roast. It would spoil, it would become rancid.
So
it would spoil.
It would spoil and become
rancid.
So it's meat.
It doesn't have to be meat, but anything that spoils over time.
Okay. Anything that spoils over time becomes rancid is now reist.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That could be it.
So it spoils over time instead of immediately.
Exactly. Something
hard
that becomes rancid is...
Although this could turn rancid quickly.
Okay, that's it. It could be that. Or it could be something else. What say you, Sabrina?
I'm a little embarrassed.
Oh, no.
I was thinking if I was wearing a different dress, you could see that I suppose that I would be participating in Reist in some way, but it's of or having good cleavage.
So, a refrigerator repairman who's bending down.
Ah.
I suppose that hadn't occurred to me that that's cleavage. Sure. Right.
Yeah. Referring to cleavage is what we're talking about here.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. That could be it. Or it could be something else. What do you say, Nat?
Rist is the residue from the extrusion of steel in a foundry. I'm sorry it's not funnier, but sometimes the truth is just plain. Residue from the extrusion of steel in a foundry.
Steel residue.
If you have to.
I have never had three more confusing definitions in 16 years. That's it is either steel residue, residue from the steel-making process, residue from something and steel is involved. It is either having to do with cleavage, wherever that may occur, or meat that's left out in the desert and spoils and goes rancid.
Yeah.
I don't care which one of them it is. I hate them all.
Right.
But it's not my problem, Carolyn. It's yours.
God.
It's the least we can do.
Yeah.
That's right. Just pick one.
Now,
you got your choice of your dust, your bust, or your rust. I'm looking right here.
I don't know. I've used residue as a bluff before.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so that's what's next?
Cleavage?
I do like cleavage.
That's what she said. It's breast without the B.
It's breast without the B. Ooh. That's true, you see.
So is that a case for or against?
Well, as Richard said, cleavage can occur in many locations.
Many locations.
There go. Right. Well, I just like it. So do we think it's spoiled or rancid whatever?
Well, it might be getting down to spoiled and rancid. But
would you like spoiled and rancid?
Yes. I think I would go with that right now. I just...
Paula, spoiled and rancid for you, too?
No, I'm still with cleavage, but you're the captain. You're the captain.
All right, we can go with cleavage.
All right, why don't we do that for fun?
Just for fun, we'll go with Sabrina.
Yes, let's go with Sabrina.
Sabrina, just for fun, they've gone with something having to do with cleavage. Is that, in fact, what Rist means?
Please fake a definition!
She didn't fake you out. All right, audience, you got a 50-50 shot. What do you think?
Rancid.
How many say the steel residue? How many say going rancid? Wow. That's pretty close. I really can't tell, but someone up there was telling the truth. Who was it?
Rancidue.
Rist to become rancid.
Is exactly what it is. 10 points. Let's close tonight. We've been enjoying the book called The Meaning of Tingo, which is a compendium of words from languages both common and exotic that English doesn't have an equivalent to. Tingo, by the way, comes from Easter Island and means to take all the objects one desires from the house of a friend, one at a time, and borrow them. That's what tingo means. So I'm going to give you these tingo-esque words from other languages, along with some clues, and you're going to tell me what they actually mean. Carolyn?
Yes.
Morgenfrisk. Morgenfrisk. Morgenfrisk is from the Danish and represents a state of mind we all could use a little more of, he said with prepositional finality.
A state of mind. It's a frisky state of mind.
Yes, in a way it is, but can you imagine what the...
Morning fresh.
You know something?
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to give you the 10
all
points.
Right.
Yes, morning.
Yeah.
Wake up happy.
Morgenfrisk is fresh and rested after a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
That's what it means. Very good.
Good.
Wow.
Doug, an occupational hazard for politicians on the road has an evocative German word, Gummiadler.
Oh.
Gummiadler.
Gummiadler.
G-U-M-M-I-E-D-L-E-R, Gummy Adler.
Too much shaking hands or kissing
babies. Yeah, is it perspiration on the hand? Or?
It is not. But it is an occupational hazard for politicians
gummy,
on the road.
Carpal tunnel syndrome from shaking hands?
No.
I think gummy. We've got it here.
Oh, from flapping your gums?
No. Oh, this is a good test.
Being stuck in something.
What does it make you think of?
Gummy?
Yes.
Gummy
but
wobbly?
Small candies.
Those are gummy bears.
Oh, gummy bears.
Don't say it. Does the other side have
yes. Well, yes, I think so. I think we have it.
Okay.
We
have an answer anyway.
Give it a shot, West Coast. What do you think?
I was thinking like a wobbly arm from shaking hands too much.
That's a great guess. It's not right. It's not, but,
or lip flap, talking too much.
Does it have something to do with speech? The speech?
Nothing whatsoever to do with speech, but it is certainly a hazard of politicians on the stump.
Being caught telling the truth?
I'm giving him some points for that.
Having to move too much. Or
Gummy Adler. No, I'm going to go the other. I'm going to go the other side. What do you think?
Carolyn? Rubber chicken circuit.
It's a rubber chicken. It exactly is. Gummy Adler actually means rubber eagle, but they translate it as a rubber chicken.
Even better.
Yeah. How do you eat this?
So, that's the symbol of our country.
And give Nat 2 points for the absolutely horrifying joke, and we'll go from there. Try this one, Arnie. The French have a cruel, if accurate, phrase for careless pedestrians. Viande pneu. Can you give us a literal translation?
Would you spell that, please?
V-I-A-N-D-E-P-N-E-U-X.
E-U-X.
Yep.
Is it V as in Victor?
Yes.
Meat.
Meat or?
Yeah, you're roadkill.
Roadkill.
You know, they're pretty close for that. It's not exactly roadkill, the exact translation, but how many points should I give?
Roadkill with sauce.
Two. Two.
Are we hamburger? What are we?
Oh, you're hamburger, all
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I'll give you 5 points.
Anyone? Ground beef? Is that what we are?
No. Anyone on the other side? No.
Yeah, well, pedestrian tartar.
No, you know, I'm going to give you 7 points total because you got to the meat. You are actually meat for tires.
Yeah, roadkill.
Oh, meat for tires.
I'm going to give him 7 points for that. I think that's fair. Meat for tires.
Roadkill. Come on.
All right.
Roadkill.
Try this one, Sabrina. Snooki, S-N-O-O-K-I, Snooki, as we all know. And for that matter, Speaker of the House John Boehner are, as the Italians say...
Criers?
Yeah.
What?
No. Slampadato. Yeah. Slampadato.
Yep.
S-O-A-M... P-A-D-A-T-O. What might that mean?
Yep,
short.
Snooki and Speaker John Boehner are, as the Italians say, slampadato.
Oh, tan? Orange?
To have like an orange skin or dark skin?
You know what? I got to give you the 10 points.
Woo!
That's right.
Nice.
Well, actually, I should have only given them 9 points because
there's
a certain element to it. But you know, it is made brown by an artificial lamp.
Nice. Well, I do call them orange.
That's true, and that's why I gave you the 10 points.
Wait a minute. Okay. The lamp is artificial, not the brown?
No, the brown is artificial, and the lamp comes later.
Made brown by an artificial lamp.
As well, you know. All right, try this one, Paula. You're on the trireme in ancient Greece. Okay. And you hear the word oop. What are you supposed to do next?
What is 911?
Yeah. Chisel 911.
You're on the trireme.
They've run out of everything in Greece.
Where am I again? The trireme?
Yes, you're on the trireme, T-R-I-R-E-M-E, in ancient Greece.
Yeah.
And you hear the word oop. What should you do next?
Duck. I don't know.
Well, in a way, duck.
Yeah,
but
get
is this a golf course? Is this their equivalent of four?
No.
I mean, what is this? Okay.
Not in ancient Greece. Not unless.
No. Okay. Trireme.
It's not.
Didn't that also survive into the Roman? It survived as a Greek word into the Roman Empire, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
And you hear
trireme.
Audience, help out a little bit.
It's a road?
I was on a
it's
boat.
It's a ship.
Yeah.
It's a ship.
Oh,
it's
a ship. Oh, a ship. Oh, or a fire. Okay, oop. Is like, so is that the signal to keep rowing?
You know, you couldn't have been more wrong.
Okay.
It's the signal to stop rowing.
It is the signal to stop rowing. That's what you do. You hear oop. You stop rolling. O-O-P.
So, oop is a Greek word, eh?
Yeah, for
so
stop.
How many points do we get?
I don't know. How many points
I'd
should I get?
I'd say about zero.
Five?
I think three, we had to give an awful lot of help there. So
I didn't.
Three points for that.
Oh, I see where three gets us.
What about
where does three get us? My goodness. Okay, well, nothing riding on this but the whole game, so don't worry about a thing. Try this one, Nat. A Koshatnik is a heinous Russian criminal whose niche makes PETA hiss and spit. What might Koshatnik mean?
Well, we're talking the era of Rasputin.
Well, we might be, but
not talking. Is it Naomi Campbell?
Will you stop?
Sorry.
Naomi
sorry.
Campbell?
I can't get there out of my...
How do you spell it?
Let me say it again. A Koshatnik, K-O-S-H-A-T-N-I-K. A Koshatnik,
Koshatnik
is a heinous Russian criminal whose niche makes PETA hiss and spit.
Oh, PETA. Oh, yeah. Like people for the ethical tree. I thought it was Peter the Czar.
No, PETA.
Sorry.
Oh,
PETA the bread. From,
yes.
By the way I talk, I sound like Betty Davis anyway.
Yeah.
It's a furry?
The one who butchers animals?
Hers. It's not about butchering animals, but...
something about snakes.
No.
No.
Something
like
about
minks.
Camels.
No,
minks. Sables, minks.
Or, yeah, I mean, it has to do something with a really unusual animal.
Maybe.
Protected animal that would be worth something because he'd be a heinous
snake
animal.
Charmer.
That's not
Koshatnik.
It. No? I'm going to give you one more shot to pull it out of the fire.
Yeah, here we go. This is for everything.
Oh, this is for everything.
Well, let me Tebow first.
Okay. No, I don't do
because the prayer's all we have at this point.
Hey, Koshatnik is a heinous Russian criminal whose niche makes PETA hiss and spit. I don't think they're going to get it.
Someone
a
who,
snake charmer?
Who skins animals is all I can think of.
No, it's not that. What do you think on the other side?
Oh, I just thought it was like a poacher of like minks and ermines and things. Like,
not no. Minks and ermines, audience. It is a dealer in stolen cats.
Cats!
That is a Koshatnik. I am so sorry because by not getting that question, you fall 10 points short of the 85-point total for this week's winners, Carolyn Faye Fox's team. Congratulations. Boy.
Only I lost you. You're not supposed to steal cats?
That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Lillian Vasquez and all the folks at KVCR-FM here in San Bernardino and Riverside, and to all the folks here at the University Theater at the University of California at Riverside. Scher and Salkin write the words. Mark Holden, ably assisted by Wes Dewberry, saves the sounds. And Zach Moore is soon to be a college graduate with a raise and a promotion. We close tonight with my favorite sage counsel from none less than Satchel Paige. Age, he said famously, is a matter of mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter. That's our wisdom for this week. Thanks, Riverside. See you next week. You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net.
Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
And celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
Youth Empowerment Through Arts and Humanities offers rock and roll summer camps for youth ages 10 to 17. Southern Girls Rock and Roll Camp and Tennessee Teens Rock Camp in Murfreesboro and Nashville seek to empower young people through the freedom of collaboration and musical exploration. Campers from bands participate in instrument lessons and workshops, including recording, screen printing, and songwriting, and play their own show at a professional venue. Registration and scholarship information available now at yeahintheborough.org.
Support for Nashville Public Radio, made possible in part by Nashville Public Radio Producers Circle, whose generous members, including Mark Hensley and Sue McClark and Jack Ross, believe in the last